Right now, actually all weekend, we have a major event happening down at North House Folk School, the Sustainability Weekend, and we got everything from Strawbill Gardens to our next guest, and we're so happy to have Mr. Mark Hansen, who is the founder of North House Folk School. A few years ago now, Mark, it's amazing the transformation of your idea into what it is now.
Yeah, it really is something.
We're so impressed.
I'm still in disbelief. I mean, we started out with, 24 courses, and now there's well over 300.
And covers a whole year. I mean, it covers there used to be some pretty big gaps there, but, it was a fledgling organization back then.
Oh, yeah, you wouldn't want me running the organization.
Well, but, as part of that same evolution has been something that you're doing right now, and your focus lately has been on small living spaces, but mm-hmm. It didn't start just now. It's something you've been thinking about for a long time.
Yeah, and it fits in really well, I think, with the North House mission, which is in part to be useful to the community. Where are the gaps? Where can we help out and assist the community? Mm-hmm. And housing is such a big deal right now.
It is.
Yeah, I've got a lot of young people who are saying, do I know of any places to rent? Does anybody have a piece of land that I can put my tent up? I mean, there's a real need there, and there's a little bit of a desperation too in people's voices. Mm-hmm. As well as, some older folks that are retired, and they've designed and they've built a great big house, and they're not sure that they needed all that space. But the architect said, gee whiz, this is the going thing, and, what drives all these decisions? And
yeah.
How do we deal with this? I mean, it's an issue.
Well, I know that back in the 80s and 90s, driving force, especially in suburbia, was to build as large a house as you could possibly afford, irregardless of how you were going to use it. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of led to a lot of white elephant suburban housing areas. So mm-hmm. that's the evolution there has changed to, well, how can we build a smaller place that's still very functional for us? You've gone a step beyond that, because what we're talking about this weekend is microhousing.
Yeah, and the whole small, tiny, micro is it's a little ambiguous, but I've been interested in small structures for many, many years, just because I've always enjoyed small structures. I enjoyed, my grandparents' cabin on Mille Lacs Lake. That was a little tiny thing that all of the old timers, whether it's Helmer Ockbeck and Hovland, or they lived in little houses and they were happy and it was enough.
Mm-hmm. And
I've got good fond memories of being in little houses and I've been making these little structures now for, about 20 years. And you've got one out on your island.
I do.
Up in Canada.
A beautiful yurt.
Yep. And I guess, my mom always used to comment that when I was a little kid that I really didn't want to stay in my bedroom. I like to sleep underneath the stairways going from the first floor to the second floor. And I had a little pillow down there and a little sleeping bag. And she said, you always wanted to sleep underneath the stairways, Yeah. I don't know. I've always felt comfortable in small spaces.
Yeah. And another part of that, too, is that you've always been very interested in boats. Mm-hmm. And designing your own sailboat kind of forced you to think about, what can I get in this space that's useful to me?
Yeah, and boats have been my passion all my life. And, there's an old axiom in the boat building business that says, big boats, big problems, little boats, little problems.
Yeah.
And I think that's true also for the size of our houses.
Yeah.
And so I feel like I can be a lot more creative in a smaller space. I really like to spend time designing. And mm-hmm. I think I've come up with some ideas that have been useful for other people, and I've got some clients that are out there looking at what's going to come next, but it's a very interesting subject that is, it's time to address the size of the structures in which we live in.
For this weekend, you're kind of what we're looking at North House is kind of micro housing. And what does that mean size-wise when we say micro housing?
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, all the houses, the shelters that I've built have been at or right around 100 square feet.
That's pretty small.
It is. It's a real popular size is 7 by 14. Mm-hmm. You know, not that's not for everyone.
What's some of the challenges when you think about, okay, I got something that's, let's say, 90 square feet, and I want to live there, and I want to be able to have the amenities that I need. What's the biggest challenges to fit into that space?
Where you go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
How do you take a shower? How do you bathe? How do you get clean? In a 100 square foot house, that's difficult to do that. Mm-hmm. Well, that's going to have to happen outside. You're going to have to go to, you know, 200, 300 square feet before you can put the bathroom inside.
Okay.
But you also need to be very careful about what's going to go in the house. It's a very intentional structure. You have to know what are the things that you own that you need that are essential. And so I always have customers write everything down. What do they need? From how many bowls to chairs and spoons and towels? Because, you know, what can be inside? What can be stored outside? What are the seasonal changes in the number of things that would be used? And so it's a discussion that is important to have with a customer to make sure that that's really for them. Or is it full-time or is it seasonal? Is it a two-week in the summer? Is it a weekend getaway? You know, more often than not, it's a weekend getaway. But there are some people that definitely want to go small, maybe single, maybe a couple that, you know, doesn't mind that sort of space. But there are some serious advantages, you know, in terms of heating and cooling and affordability and mm-hmm. the length of time it takes to build it. You know, what is a 100 square foot building cost? Materials is, you know, right around $7,000-$8,000. And so that's pretty affordable.
That's like a very, very well used car.
Yeah, yeah. You know? Or, you know, a good sized fish house.
Yeah.
You know, it's small. It's very, very small. Yeah. You know, I don't build, you know, numbers of things, these structures in a calendar year. I might build one a year. Mm-hmm. But that's enough. And I get to meet some really interesting people in the process, and there's lots of interest into the mm-hmm. future, and I'd like to see more people building them. And, you know, 100 square feet is just my thing.
Could be 250,
But a lot of the ideas that you would go into a 100 square foot house will be useful for a 400 square foot house or mm-hmm. 500. Mm-hmm. So it's working with the people to find out what it is that they can really get along with. You know, how old are they? You know, young people, boy, there could be kids coming along. Do you design a house that can be added on to? Do you build a small house that can be transported? Mm-hmm. So you're living on other people's property, for instance. Is it on wheels? Is it on skids? Does it float? There's a number of factors that enter in that make small housing pretty interesting.
You know, now this doesn't relate directly to the houses that you're building, but, you know, I remember all the shackers that lived up here for many years as loggers, and they would have their home moved to wherever the logging site was. Mm-hmm. So very transportable. Now here, there might be a variety of reasons why you would want your home to be just like that. Yep. Now.
Yep, yep. You know, those that I put on wheels have the advantage of, you know, moving about. Mm-hmm. So if there's a seasonal change you'd like to make, that's not an issue. And so it's a new thing. We've had mobile homes, RVs for many, many years, and now this is more permanent housing that I build, or semi-permanent housing. So it'll sit in a spot for, you know, months at a time. I don't build houses that you can take a long weekend out to Montana with. Mm-hmm. They're more structured to an environment that's, you know, on more than likely on private land, you know, for the structures that I've been building for myself and Wendy have been friends' places or like, for instance, there's an opportunity to stay down in Lakehead Boat Basin, where the boat storage is in the winter months. Mm-hmm. They have very reasonable rates for staying down there. And so you can find some very interesting nooks and crannies around Lake Superior. And we like being around the lake. being close to the lake. And so with the movable little house, you can get some pretty nice views and spend time in some great little communities, whether it's Cornucopia or up in Rossport. And Wendy and I have been running around the lake for, you know, about 30 years now. So we've met a lot of great folks and we know places where we'd like to spend time. And so that's kind of what we've been.
Have a movable home.
Yeah.
For those periods of time. Yeah. How about construction materials? How do they differ if you're going to build something small, like 100 square feet, as opposed to somebody building a 1,200 square foot home?
Well, what I use are boat building techniques for construction, which makes them much lighter and quite strong. The use of bulkheads and laminates and bending curved roofs, these sorts of things all add to the strength of a boat.
That's something that most people wouldn't think about.
No, so there's a lot less waste in materials. Pieces can be fitted together. It's more labor intensive, but you come out with a nice warm, solid, laminated up a wall, for instance, with polystyrene and some really good glues. And I'm a really big fan of good quality windows. Because you're going small, you're not spending so much money, why not put good quality materials that require very little maintenance? Mm-hmm. So you're not out there fixing things, you know, every year and replacing. And so you can really get the good stuff in there. And then it's, you know, measuring and being very careful. The interiors of boats that I built, I think, was good training for building the interior of a small home, because you really have to measure up the size of the people that are going to use it. Yeah. And what are the activities that are going to, what is the intention of it? Is it living in it for 6 months? Is it living in it for just weekends? Going back to what's going to go in it, and it's a long process to mock up the interior. And I know I've redone the interior of Okvik, this Norwegian pilot boat that I built 10 years ago. Three times.
Wow.
I've redone it three times because it just wasn't right. Now it's just right.
Perfect. Yeah.
And basically what we're looking at is good, comfortable bed, two places to sit for Wendy and myself that are comfortable, three working surfaces. So you can have a laptop, you can have a place to prepare foods, and you got a place to, you know, stage the meal, for instance. So she has workspace, I have workspace. I like to lay down and read, and we do a lot of reading, and she likes small spaces. And there's a lot of questions, and I think it's really important to hash this out with a partner. What's going to work for you? Because it has to work for both partners whoever else is joining you in the use of it. It's good to have that discussion because, it's a bit of a dance. I mean, I always like to have, you know, passageways between one part of the trailer wide enough so two people can pass at the same time. A place for everything and everything in its place. Everything has to be measured up. So, Dave, it's, you know, if you're going to be on a boat, things have to be stored. They have to be a place where everything lives. And it's much easier that way. You're not... Mm-hmm. You don't want things flying around when you're on a boat, especially.
So it's a major chore for somebody who is interested in your design or somebody's design. That list that they make is pretty critical.
Yep.
That maybe a year from now they say, "Gosh, you know, I forgot about this thing, or I forgot about that thing." And I imagine you have sort of a list of common things that they should think about.
Yeah, I mean, for instance, on the gypsy wagon, what have I got here? I got it listed down here. I've got 241 items.
Okay.
And then you can add another 40 items just for winter. Stuff like that.
Yeah.
I'd like to know everything that goes in there. I mean, we've all camped. You have to make a list of things you need to go camping. Well, this is just a little more extensive.
Yeah, you've also in your list for Gypsy Wagon, you say here's the space, here's what you're going to do in this space, here's what it allows you to do. How about the next thing, which is how are you going to heat it if you were hauling it down to Death Valley? How are you going to cool it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And What I've been working on with this Gypsy Wagon is a polycarbonate bathhouse, which is basically greenhouse plastic. It's double wall insulated, see-through plastic that you heat the space with the sun and get temperatures up to 140 degrees in a little small 4x4 bathhouse, which to me was... I couldn't hardly believe it could get that hot. I left a candle in there the night before, and it melted the candle. Oh. So just to give you an idea, it's as hot as a sauna.
Yeah.
And you can vent all that hot air into the cabin. This is January now that I'm getting these temperatures. And wow. So isn't that interesting? And I can vent that into the wagon and now store that heat.
Let's say that again. That's solar power.
It's
heating
coming
this
from the sun.
Cubicle, and it's something that's located outside of the building.
On the south side of the building.
Yeah.
South side of the Gypsy Wagon, for instance.
So you store it underneath the building?
It just goes right, hot air rises, and it got vents on the top of the bathhouse, so it just goes right into the wagon. No, there's no motors, no fans.
No, but as far as the polycarbonate unit itself, that collapses down?
That all comes off, detaches from the side of the wagon, and I can fold that up, and it goes into undercarriage storage.
Wow. So there again, you created more space.
Yes. I've got additional storage underneath the carriage for any number of items. So, jack stands and the steps remove, and they go underneath there. So there's a place for everything and everything in its place. But the whole bathhouse, the use of solar... thermal solar panels is, to me, revolutionary. I just delighted at the temperatures I was getting that once I got it all hooked up.
And people can go see that right
now.
Yes,
it's down in the North House Commons area right now between the blue and the red building, and I'll be sleeping in it tonight.
Okay.
Slept in it last night.
You come and knock on the door. Hey, when you setting up that solar shower? That's kind of handy because you can wave at the neighbors, too.
Yeah.
When you're taking your shower. Look at me.
Yeah. Look at old strange
it's
marks
nice
down
in here.
There. Huh?
Yeah. You've got another little wagon down there too.
Yeah, it's a little micro wagon, I'm calling it. It's 325 pounds. It's mounted on a rack and roll trailer, a little Yakima motorcycle wheels, super lightweight. So we can hook that up to the Jetta and go down the road. It's like there's nothing behind you, and it's real comfortable. Wendy and I really like to go to the UP and up to the Sleeping Giant and over to Rossport. We have friends, and we like to bicycle here and there in the fall and the spring of the year. And so it's been a nice little getaway rig that everything's in there, If we've got the crazy relatives coming up for the weekend and they're 10 miles out of town, we can jump in that and get the heck out of there,
Yeah, exactly.
So it's a getaway. It's a getaway. Yeah. It's small. It's got a little awning that comes off, and it's just delightful to use.
We're speaking with Mark Hansen, and Mark has got he had a class today down at North House Folk School, and he's going to be giving a luncheon discussion tomorrow at noon down at the Folk School about not only the Gypsy Wagon but small living spaces in general. And of course, Dave Tierstig is here on the other mic, and Dave sees a lot of different types of units at Rec Park. How often do you see something like what Mark is creating?
Well, Mark's certainly one-of-a-kind creations are pretty few and far between, although I do see some custom truck campers. Some of these, home-built wooden truck campers are a little more... popular, but no, certainly Mark's stuff's one of a kind.
Yeah,
it's always a treat to see it next door. But the trend is going smaller. It's either, well, it's polarized. It's either really, really big 50-foot motorhomes because
they can,
luxury is in and will always be, but for the average Joe, I think it's a lot easier to tow the little 20-footers and 16-footers and scamps and some of these real iconic small trailers from Canada's got a bowler? Very popular. Aluminum, fiberglass, lightweight. Go small, go now is a cult following for a lot of these scamp trailers, especially, tend to congregate, and we have scamp rallies, and lots of fun can be had in a very small space. So there's no shame in that.
Yeah, and it's a lot of it's market driven and cost of energy, and you know, the boomers are getting older, and the young folks coming up don't have quite the haven't come up in an economy that was like the economy same. That we grew up in, for instance.
And yeah, absolutely. I understand there's some interest in your designs. Somebody outside of Duluth is interested in maybe commercializing some of your work.
Yeah, Doug McEnany. He's seen the numbers and the interest, and he wants to go manufacture some of my designs, and it's a good guy to work with, and he's a capable builder. I've been building boats for 30-some years, and so we've been doing some putting our heads together and coming up with some approaches that he thinks will be good, and I agree. He's got a nose. He's been doing the research, and there's, you know, we've got trailer parks, but there's also environmental parks that are sprouting up around the country, and they're quite successful. There's quite a return on investments with trailer parks, and they're seeing that there's probably a pretty good return on these eco parks too, where you have a micro home that is placed in there in the vicinity, where you've got a little more space between units, maybe common sewer, common water, so that you can live more simply, less money in heating and cooling, and an investment that could potentially be moved should you decide to, you know, move to another community, move to Portland. There's a lot going on in the Portland area, apparently, in terms of micro housing. And, it's the way of the future. They just had the big national convention, small home builders convention in North Carolina, first part of April. And I guess it was well attended. And some of the most busiest websites are the small home websites. Hmm. I think people are seeing the value in it. It takes a while for people to change their minds on things. And, once...
It's a big part of it is evolving into the idea.
And the thing of it is that they're not necessarily, they're not mobile homes. They're a lot of wood. There's a lot of aesthetics built into them. And a little higher quality windows, roofing, skirting around, covering wheels, these small home builders are making money. They're doing really well, and they're averaging about $40,000 per unit.
Okay,
and so you're getting more into the affordable areas with those numbers.
How about size when they're talking about units that are going to be in an area like this? Is there a general trend that say, hey, this would work?
Well, they typically run 8.5 feet because that's the width that you can travel down the road without special permits.
Sure.
And then they range from 12 to 16 to 24 feet in length.
Okay.
And if you look up tiny homes websites, there's just a ton of examples of what's going on around the country.
I got something for you, Mark. I just was into some tech site, Fast Company, and they're talking about 3D printing and the ability to manufacture homes with 3D printers. Have you any experience here, come across this yet?
Well, yeah, we discussed that today in the class that I was teaching. Doug McEnany, the guy that I've been working with in Duluth, is particularly interested in that. It's just amazing what they can do with the computer now and just pop stuff up and
change. This was talking about, recycling too, using waste products from construction sites, feeding it through the printer, and suddenly you've got a, home from waste.
Yeah, you can match up panels.
Yeah,
you can. There's various ways that you can laminate up certain panels. So there may be apartments that are built, and there's a lot of half sheets of plywood or three-quarter sheets of plywood that would go in the dumpster.
They go away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the average house in America that's built today is running about a ton of waste per house. Yeah. Well, we're moving into an era of diminishing resources, and I think this is answering these questions, and it's not a fad. I think probably big homes are the fad.
We began this talk talking about what you can do as a part of helping the community and with different ideas, and this being being one of them right now. Where would you see something like this fitting into our community?
Well, I think it could. I think it could be someone who's got acreage, for instance, that may want to have a neighbor that, you know, is, you know, a little bit remote from the owner's residence. This could be something that could fit into the affordable housing that they're talking about in the Cedar Grove edition. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's some things that need to be tried. Mm-hmm. Do some experimentation, and I think that if people could see the aesthetics involved in you know, well done small house, I think they'd be pleasantly surprised. There's lofts that you can put in them. There's you know, all sorts of different custom designs that you can make to meet the needs of the residents that are going to be spending time in it.
And they don't necessarily have to be movable, so you don't have to be limited to 8.5 feet.
No, that's right. Yeah. And you can move a 10-foot wide building, given a $200 permit and coordination with the highway department and that sort of thing.
Or build a house that's going to always be there.
Yes,
that
absolutely.
Just happens to be smaller.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep.
So do you see this, like the West End now, I know they had a pretty well-attended meeting talking about that topic, is affordable housing down there, and we've had many of them up here. And are you being contacted at all about smaller houses by our local government?
No. I'm not an architect.
Of course not, but you're designing you're designing the concept.
Yep. And I enjoy the design work, particularly the interiors, because I think that's where I don't think quite enough thought is given. But that goes back to what's going to go in there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I see probably, 14 by 24, 12 by 24 as being a reasonable size, given the family, the couple, the individual, that it still gives us space. I mean, here in America, we have a hard time giving up our stuff. And there's the crux. I mean, there's a lot of change that has to occur in people's thinking. And I think that's going to change as resources diminish, become more expensive, energy becomes more expensive. These things are going to come to the fore. And I mean, look at Grand Marais. Look at the little tiny houses in Grand Marais that were built in the 20s and 30s
yes,
and
exactly. 40s.
There's some tiny little houses mm-hmm. that, well, you know, the average architect wouldn't stand for it now.
But, and all the cabins that were in this area, too, were all small originally. Yeah. And now, of course, a lot of them have been knocked down, and they built large cabins. But the original concept was small.
Yep.
Weekend getaway. Boom.
Yeah.
That's all we need.
Small with a really big garage.
Well,
or
that,
shop.
Yeah. That's, I was on your dwarf by, you know, got to have me a big garage, you know. So
I remember when we were kids, we'd be driving down gravel roads, and if the barn was bigger than the house, the man was in charge. And if the house was bigger than the barn, the woman was in charge.
You've got it. Exactly. What are you working on now, Marco? We've seen the completed gypsy wagon that's down at North House. Mm-hmm. So the micro wagon that's down there also. You've built some for people already that are using them as cabins. Mm-hmm. Have you evolved into another size or?
Well, I'm very interested in composting, and learning more about that, and doing some design work on both gray and black water. This problem has been solved long ago, but it's a matter of putting together systems that can work for houses that can move, for instance. So we don't need to look at the black water and the gray water necessarily as waste.
Now, can you define that for people, black water, gray water, what the heck is it?
Gray water is stuff that comes out of the sink and out of the laundry, you know, systems that you have. Black water is basically sewage. Urine and fecal matter. Mm-hmm. And for thousands of years, they haven't used fresh water to get rid of that. I mean, do we want to use drinking water to do that? I mean, southern Minnesota now, Worthington, that doesn't have any water. There's no water down in that part of the state.
I'm not familiar with that.
I think it's
wells going dry, you mean? Or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the aquifer is dry.
Drying up.
And so, now we need to think about that. And a lot of the composting toilets that I'm reading, hearing about, really don't work that well. because they require propane or electricity to heat up. I'm thinking, why not use the sun? Because you need to bring the fecal matter up to 140 degrees in order to kill the pathogens. So it's not dangerous to the public. And their work, they require effort to tend. But you can make good black dirt that can be used for growing. There's various substances like worms. Worms put into that mix. Adding more carbon into that mix, you can make really good soil with it. And I think that that is something that needs to be figured out so that we don't have to spend, you know, $18,000 to $25,000 on septic systems. Is there another way of doing this?
Or $30,000 or $40,000.
Exactly. And so I think it requires some imagination, and I think it requires, you know, that the public take a look at maybe some other options to doing it. I mean, I see people that are, you know, really struggling financially for any number of reasons. I mean, price of propane this winter, for instance, you know, difficult winter, but payments, monthly payments, and you know, there's a real burden there, and there's a desperation that I see in people these days, and so maybe there's some ideas we can come up with to help alleviate some of that stress, give people a little more freedom, a little more money that they can keep in their pocket.
And do any of those systems kind of relate to the small houses that we're talking about and where they sit and how they would be used?
I think so. I think there's any number of approaches, you know, shared systems, shared water systems, for instance. You know, how we arrange, how many homes can you put on a piece of property if they're smaller and well placed,
and then what kind of system do you use so that it can be used mutually?
Yes, for instance, a laundry system that's shared by X number of homes. I mean, these are things that are already being done. In Milwaukee, and there's another big one out in Portland that's receiving a lot of attention. So this is happening already, and it's we'll continue to talk about it here in Cook County as well.
Now we began the program talking about the micro houses, and I know there's a lot of places to look to get more information, but I believe that a friend of yours is putting out a book that's going to contain a lot of these ideas.
Yeah, Lloyd Kahn is a fellow who's come to North House, and he is a publisher who's been publishing architectural books for, about 40 years. He's got over 40 books that he's published. Great guy, and I've got four projects in his new book that should be out end of the month.
Okay, real soon.
Yeah, it's called Tiny Houses on the Move.
Okay.
So
Lloyd Kahn is K-A-H-N?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
For people that are looking for that, and a lot of times you can pre-buy those books. So while your memory is still thinking about it, you know, you can call up and find out when they're going to be out there, and they'll put your name on the list.
Yeah, I've seen a preview of some of the work that's in there. It's a pretty interesting book.
Yeah, and Mark, you'll have not only your small houses, but I believe some talk about the sailboats that you've built and some other projects you've done.
Yep.
What would be the other projects besides the...
Well...
that are,
know,
in the book.
You know, for years I did the caribou survey for the Ministry of Natural Resources up on Lake.
Okay,
Nevada.
Yeah, right.
And hopefully I can go up there again. But, you know, I've designed a really nice little tent, a micro tent that's double walled. And it's got some very interesting features that make it extremely warm and, you know, for pretty hostile, you know, subarctic environment up there. Mm-hmm. And built some features into it that I just make it really enjoyable to use. So there's lots of little things added to it that okay. Make it very, very, very comfortable. And then there's my son Dan, he got a Dodge Sprinter van, Mercedes Benz rig that I set up for, you know, he's handicapped, so I got lifts and hoists, and so he can live in that and get around in it. And that was a great project, very interesting.
And you involve quite a few local folks in designing and building that.
Yeah. Donnie Eliason has built all the stoves that I've designed and does just a magnificent job. He's just a really super skilled guy. It's Don Olson, he's shipped houses up to Canada. you know, in Nebing Township, if you build something under 100 square feet, you don't need a building permit and your taxes don't go up.
Right.
That's the way it is in Nebing Township. And so the Canadian folks have shown great interest in now, things that I've made, designed.
I know we're kind of running out of time, but are there obstacles as far as zoning is concerned in having a small house that you know of?
There isn't.
Okay.
Once you get into Lake and St. Louis County, it's different. We don't have a building inspector in the county. Mm-hmm. There are standards, building standards that you need to meet in case someone is injured because there's not a railing on one thing or another and someone falls off. The builder is then liable. But we don't have an inspector, and so there's some latitude.
Okay.
In what we can build in this county, which makes this sort of a really interesting experimental county here.
Exactly. What we don't have is a lot of land.
No, we don't. And so maybe there's a way to share.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Who knows?
What a concept.
Yeah. I mean, there's already...
Sharing? I don't want to share. Well, what do you mean?
There are people that want to share their property with younger folks for... Mm-hmm. You know, maybe helping out with this, that, and the other thing. Young folks, young couple need some space to put their little shelter. That could be beneficial for all parties.
Great.
Yeah.
We've been speaking with Mark Hansen, and Mark is the founder of North House Folk School. He's taught a class down there today, which involves several builders, local builders.
Thank you, Buck. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you.
For all your work here.
Great.